Hello and welcome to Hot Type, Security Books and Audio, brought to you by SearchSecurity.com and Addison Wesley. Joining us for this edition is Richard Baitlick, founder of Dow Security and author of Extrusion Detection, Security Monitoring for Internal Intrusions. This book examines how a defensible network compares to others and provides strategies for monitoring the defensible network. But before we proceed, here's a quick word from our sponsor.
Are you struggling to control the many aspects of messaging security in your enterprise? Keeping tabs on email security, instant messaging security, and mobile device security is a challenge for every InfoSec pro. But SearchSecurity.com's Messaging Security School is here to help. Each on-demand lesson is packed with tools and tactics to help you develop and implement an effective messaging defense strategy. Learn essential practices for securing mobile devices, study countermeasures for malicious email code, and gain the keys to safeguard instant messaging. Start your coursework today at searchsecurity.com/messaging. That's searchsecurity.com/messaging.
And now, reading a selection from Chapter 2, Defensible Network Architecture, here's Richard Baitlick.
Defensible Network Architecture. R2 networks are built with security in mind. They are generally designed using today's predominant technology, and they place performance ahead of defense. With Ethernet-based local area networks, for example, we have seen the transition from half-duplex 10 megabits per second links to full-duplex switch to 100 megabits per second links. Gigabit Ethernet at 1,000 megabits per second is being adopted, with sub-$70 8-port gigabit switches marketed to home users. While these new technologies increase the data carrying capacity of the network, speed has come at the expense of visibility. On a half-duplex 10 megabits per second link, each node can see all traffic. Monitoring is simple when one can connect a probe into a classic single-speed hub. With switched full-duplex networks, other approaches must be taken. Beyond technological concerns, security analysts must address measurement problems. Issues that can be easily measured receive more attention than those that cannot. Users complain when the network is slow, not when a stealthy intruder has infiltrated their organization. Therefore, administrators will notice and react to a heavily used pipe before they take action on security matters. I define a defensible network as an information architecture that is monitored, controlled, minimized, and current. The order of these principles reflects my belief about their ease of adoption. Relatively speaking, it is easier to monitor than it is to control, easier to control than to minimize, and easier to minimize than to keep current. This is especially true of legacy networks. This chapter and excerpt examines the theory behind these four principles and offers techniques and tools for implementing the principles. Managers can listen to determine if their organizations meet best practice standards without worrying about technical details. Technicians will appreciate learning why they implement certain strategies to improve the defensibility of their network. Analysts and operators will understand how limiting the amount of traffic allowed to enter or leave an enterprise facilitates detecting and controlling intrusions. Those familiar with the work of Carnegie Mellon's Software Engineering Institute and its Network System Survivability Program might wonder how defensible networks compare to survivable networks. The Survivable Systems Engineering Project defines survivability as the capability of a system to fulfill its mission in a timely manner in the presence of attacks, failures, or accidents. Survivability requires four components: resistance, which is the capability of a system to deter attacks; recognition, which is the capability of a system to recognize attacks or the probing that precedes attacks; recovery, a system's ability to restore services after an intrusion has occurred; and finally, adaptation and evolution, which are critical to maintaining resistance to ever-increasing intruder knowledge of how to exploit otherwise unchanging system functions. Looking at the security problem from this standpoint, defensible networks are those that have the best chance of not being compromised, while survivable networks are those that continue to work despite intrusions. I prefer to keep intrusions at bay as long as possible, even though prevention as a security strategy ultimately fails. This latter fact does not mean we should abandon preventing intrusions, however. This book does not address survivability beyond this excerpt. While I agree with the concept, at the moment I believe our information gathering and assessment products and processes are too immature to evaluate the survivability of the enterprise. One can be fairly certain that an intrusion has occurred if one uses network security monitoring principles and investigates incidents properly. It is far less certain how that intrusion will affect the ability of the enterprise to deliver services while being compromised. Therefore, this section focuses on methods to give security staff the greatest chances to prevent intrusions. While some of these principles apply in the post-intrusion realm, survivability is not the primary focus. The post-intrusion features of this section apply to those performing network incident response. Network incident response involves containing and eventually removing intruders from an enterprise, and implementing a defensible network architecture is an excellent way to accomplish that goal. Monitoring the defensible network. A truly defensible network permits security administrators to achieve pervasive network awareness. Pervasive network awareness is the ability to collect the network-based information from the viewpoint of any node in the network required to make decisions. Organizations possessing pervasive network awareness have the best chance to assess the effectiveness of their risk mitigation strategies. They are also best equipped to detect and respond to intrusions when preventive measures fail. The first half of the definition mentions collecting network-based information. Network security monitoring depends on full content, session, statistical, and alert data. These four forms of network-based evidence provide analysts the greatest range of host-independent evidence available. One can seldom know what form of data will offer the first indication of compromise, or what form of data will lead to a fruitful investigation. Therefore, collecting all four to the greatest extent allowed by technical, legal, and political means is a central tenet of network security monitoring. An independent system for collecting network traffic is a powerful detection, response, and forensics tool. From a security standpoint, one can never fully trust data on a host that is suspected of being compromised. In an age of kernel mode rootkits for Unix and Windows systems, host-based forensic investigators can never be sure the operating system in question is reporting valid data. A compromised server might happily fail to show sensitive financial documents being transferred via a covert channel. Only an independent third party, namely a network-based sensor, can reliably observe and report that activity. Although independent network-centric monitoring will capture evidence of compromise, a network sensor is not omniscient. Data exchange via a covert channel, an encrypted tunnel, an obscure binary protocol, an unusual encoding mechanism, or even an unexpected language can frustrate network-centric monitoring. In those cases, host-based logs might be more useful. Because of the probability that an intruder will tamper with logs in a compromised system, it is important to safely collect copies of logs in a centralized location. Decision-making is a central element in pervasive network awareness. Good decision-making relies on trust. Analysts are less likely to report suspicious or malicious activity to higher authority if they do not trust their IDS reports or IPS blocking actions. The following conditions tend to undermine analysts' trust in the decision-making infrastructure. First, the analyst cannot determine why the IDS reports the alert or the IPS blocks traffic. This is the case when signatures are not public or when anomaly-based systems do not explain why they complain. This is also a problem for closed-source products. Open-source products allow users to inspect and modify code as needed, which facilitates trust and understanding of the IDS-IPS decision-making logic. Second, the analyst is given alert data without any supporting information. Traditional vendors believe an alert is the end goal of the intrusion detection or prevention process. When the IDS or IPS blinks red, they consider their job done. Those implementing NSM believe the alert is only an indicator. It is the start of the investigation, not the end. Once alert data is available, analysts can turn to session, full content, and statistical data for support. And finally, the intrusion detection and prevention processes are alert-centric. Systems that depend solely upon generating or acting upon alerts are easy to bypass. For example, intruders who wish to evade the open-source Snort IDS engine can download and install a copy. If their attack fails to trigger a Snort alarm, they have a reasonable assurance their technique is stealthy. One could argue that the attack is stealthy by Snort standards alone, but commercial IDSs and IPSs tend to offer similar functionality. The second half of the pervasive network awareness definition emphasizes collecting data from the viewpoint of any node on the network. This is important because any network node can suffer a variety of problems, including hardware faults, operating system glitches, application misconfigurations, and ultimately, compromise by unauthorized parties. The troubleshooting and investigation processes are most effective when one is closest to the system of interest. For example, one might notice that a hub has failed if its collision light is blinking madly or if its power supply has died. I have used hubs that refuse to work when not resting completely flat. I also observe the effects of a damaged network uplink cable by seeing a hub's collision light blink nonstop. On another occasion, a system unexpectedly started spewing packets at incredible speed. Investigating the problem required independent access to the traffic exiting the distressed server. I was not able to log into the system that was shooting these packets and had to collect traffic from another system on the hub to which it was attached. The media access control address of the packets indicated that they were 802.3x flow control packets, but I do not know why my system decided to spontaneously transmit thousands of them per second. Swapping out the network card solved the problem. I define security as the process of maintaining an acceptable level of perceived risk. Perceptions are based on observations, preferably observations from each node on the network. The greater the level of network visibility, the more accurate the perceptions of the observer. Recall the risk equation, which combines threat, vulnerability, and asset value elements. Pervasive network awareness helps security professionals reduce risk in three ways. First, threats are more easily detected and assessed because they are directly viewed. This is management by fact, not management by belief. Vulnerabilities in nodes and infrastructure can be recognized and closely monitored for indications of compromise. Not all vulnerabilities can be patched, so weak systems must be closely watched. And finally, highly observed networks can be more easily inventoried, and the data they carry can be classified according to the importance of the organization. This facilitates accurate asset value calculations. When handling a compromise, remember that the only constant in the incident response equation is the victim system. A moderately informed intruder will vary the source of his attacks, using multiple stepping stone systems to mask his location and identity. He may operate several stealthy backdoors and could alter the means by which he communicates with the target. Only by closely observing the victim, as close to the victim as possible, can one gain the most realistic picture of the intruder's activities. Consider the case of monitoring solely in the perimeter. Assume an intruder compromises the system in the demilitarized zone and communicates with the victim using an encrypted channel. If the intruder then exploits another system in the perimeter, using the first victim as a launch pad, there is no way for the perimeter sensor to directly see the new attack. As far as the perimeter sensor is concerned, the intruder is still communicating only with the first victim. The defender's visibility is improved if she can observe traffic within the DMZ, perhaps through a switched port analyzer or span port on the DMZ switch. In some cases, a span port or similar mirroring solution is unavailable. The target may be the only system initially identified as being compromised. The defender can move even closer to watching a compromised victim by caging it. These are only a few of many possible scenarios. I discuss gaining access to the wire with a particular emphasis on internal monitoring issues later in the book. Beyond simply being able to observe individual hosts, it is important to have visibility into the traffic they pass. Some network traffic is more difficult to interpret than others. The following shows traffic types ordered by increasing opacity or obscurity. First is ASCII text protocols, then common binary protocols, then obscure binary protocols, next tunneled protocols, and finally encrypted protocols. Of the four types of NSM data, alert data is most adversely affected by increasing levels of opacity or obscurity. Encrypted application data, such as that carried by HTTP wrapped by SSL, cannot be easily examined. If a security analyst wishes to gain access to the encrypted traffic on port 443 TCP, she must terminate the encrypted connection prior to the monitoring platform or deploy a system to decrypt the traffic on the fly. Later in the book, I discuss techniques in greater detail, for example, a method for termination of SSL using the open-source SQUID proxy server. Some organizations that trust data carried through encrypted channels have decided to accept the risk of compromise. Some of them mitigate this risk by deploying host-based IDSs or IPSs on the systems that accept encrypted connections. Other organizations haven't considered the consequences of carrying encrypted traffic, while still more simply don't care. Those organizations are the favored victims of intruders who recognize that any clear text attack against port 80 TCP works equally well when encrypted using port 443 TCP if available. Monitoring for security purposes is different than monitoring for the performance of the node or infrastructure device. While it is important to be sure a workstation, server, switch, or router is alive, it is more important to be sure that it is not compromised. Attaining this level of confidence in the network requires both keeping track of the systems on the network through inventories and collecting records of their activities via neutral traffic transaction logging. Achieving pervasive network awareness provides security staff with insight into their network's operations. Monitoring a completely open network, where parties are able to send and receive any traffic they like, is extremely difficult. Therefore, a defensible network must impose limits on the traffic transmitted in and out of the organization.
Again, that was Richard Baitlick, founder of Dow Security, reading a selection from his book, Extrusion Detection, Security Monitoring for Internal Intrusions, published by Addison Wesley. You can find more of our podcasts at searchsecurity.com/podcast.